Welcome. My name is Shahid. I'm a technical evangelist from Microsoft. And so we're here to talk about Cassandra with one of our partners, DataStax. So Luke Tillman will talk about it in the later part of the event. So we'll start off with a quick intro about Azure and the cloud and what Microsoft has in store for you. Many of you are already in the cloud. A lot of you are with Azure already. So before we get started with the main event, we'll also have a couple of startups who are here with us today to talk about their own experiences with Azure. From Linux servers to Windows servers, they're going to share their experience with what they have in store. All right? So our agenda for today, as I mentioned, quick intro to Azure. We're going to do the fireside chat with our startups, follow up to the main event. And we'll have a Q&A to follow with that. So the Microsoft team here, myself, Shahid Chaudhry, I'm a technical evangelist in the DC metro area. So I work primarily DC, Maryland, Virginia. But I also travel up and down the East Coast or across the states as needed. So how many people here are from DC? Right, I see a bunch of hands. How many people here from Maryland and Virginia? All right, so a mix of everything, right? So I do cover all three of them. So back there we have Mustafa, who's smiling over there, waving. He just joined Microsoft last week, and he'll be helping me out in the DC area as well. We'll be doing a lot of the same things, working with startups, getting you guys up to speed. And in the middle there we have Brett Wolf, who unfortunately couldn't stay, who wasn't feeling well. But he is a director of evangelism for the East Coast, and he comes here quite often. And he's also located in Charlotte, North Carolina. So again, if you have any questions at all, reach out to any one of us. So me and Mustafa will be your primary contacts for the DC area, all right? So with the introductions out of the way, let's talk about Azure. So right now, I have this updated map that shows 19 regions worldwide. These regions actually talk about the data centers that we have across the US and the world. So you'll see there are some giant circles that don't have the exact position. And that sort of tells you about the cloud itself, where you don't really have to know about everything that's going on behind the scenes. You could have maybe an old school setup where you have a couple of on-premises servers, you're managing your IT infrastructure yourself. But really, with the cloud, you don't have to worry about a lot of those things. As you go from having things where you're maintaining your IT infrastructure to going up to the cloud, a lot of that stuff is taken off your hands, so you can worry about your application, your product, your customers, and your services, right? So having all these services and data centers around the world helps you get that level of service that you would expect from a world-class cloud service. So up here, I talk about the different devices that Azure supports. Again, you'll see a bunch of logos here, not just Microsoft logos, but you see Apple and Android as well. These are some of the primary mobile platforms that we've seen really rise to cover a lot of the market. A lot of your consumers will have Android and also iOS devices. So to be able to help you in that regard, Azure Mobile Services and Notification Services and backend code will help you power any front-end code. So we see someone here with a C-sharp t-shirt over here. So Microsoft's language C-sharp can actually be used to not only develop applications that run on those platforms, you can use third-party SDKs like Xamarin. You can use third-party tools like Unity to build games for any platform, even our competitor's platform. On the back end, Azure can power any device, including Android and iOS, as I mentioned. So again, a broad array of devices, and a lot of people who are new to Azure may not be aware of that. Next, we talk about operating systems. So initially, when Microsoft had launched Azure, the name Windows Azure was used a lot, and now being Microsoft Azure, it also tells a story about our broad support for not just Windows, but Linux as well. In fact, we're seeing a rise of Linux servers that are in Azure right now, and the virtual machines that are there, we're seeing about 20% or so are actually using Linux. So again, if you just want a full-blown Linux server, there's many different configurations available that are pre-built for you. These aren't just built by Microsoft. These are built with collaboration with our partners. So the different variations of Linux are available in Microsoft's Azure cloud as we start to embrace more of the open nature of the industry that we have today. So moving on to, before we move on to the data portion, the reason I put this up, Microsoft loves Linux. So this is something that our CEO, Satya Nadella, has been talking about. And the reason we do that is to show you that we have support from everyone at Microsoft from the top down. So it's not just something that someone within the Azure team cooked up. This is something that all of Microsoft supports. So whether you're getting just a virtual machine up and running, or you're wondering about how you can replicate your application across various data centers, you know that you have the support you need from Microsoft. We also collect a lot of feedback from everyone. I talk to startups one-on-one, and sometimes I hear, hey, you know, this stuff isn't working for me, or I wish I had a little bit more of this. you should always feel free to come to me with stuff like that, because that feedback goes up the chain within Microsoft to the product teams. And when we collect feedback from the community, that's when we can all get together and make things better, all right? So some of the different data platforms we support, starting with Microsoft's own SQL Server, you'll notice a lot of other big names here, like Oracle and IBM. So these, back in the day, would be our primary competitors, which they still are. And you wouldn't expect them to be on our platform, but they are. And the way this is set up is that these are virtual machines and other setups that we have with our competitors' products running on our platform today that you can just point and click and set up very quickly. So if you need a SQL Server setup, you can do that. If you need an Oracle setup, you can do that as well. So what if you wanted to go beyond these commercial products and wanted to use something like MySQL? So for those of you who have heard of the LAMP stack with Linux, Apache, MySQL, and the P being PHP, but people also use Perl and Python and other P languages. But MySQL, being the data platform that's quite popular for a lot of PHP developers worldwide, is also supported. Down at the bottom line, you see some alternatives like Cassandra here, which Luke will be talking about today, followed by MongoDB, which is a NoSQL implementation that is very popular. Microsoft's own NoSQL implementation is DocumentDB, which is also supported in Azure. And finally, we have Hadoop for big data. So big data is a buzzword that you may have heard around. Microsoft has something called HD Insight, which is a Hadoop implementation in Azure. Finally, we have Redis, which is a caching solution. So Microsoft went through different caching mechanisms to see what works best. And Redis is an existing caching mechanism that's been in existence outside of Microsoft. So to be able to embrace that into Azure just goes to show you the open nature of the industry as it is today. So next we have the different developer platforms. So if you have a startup today, whether you're developing yourself or if you've hired a bunch of developers, you'll know that you have to pick a technology and usually stick to it. You may have developers that know a wide variety of things, but chances are slim that you're going to have 10 different languages in your product. You might stick to one. So in order to accommodate all different sorts of developers, we go beyond .NET and support additional languages as well. I mentioned PHP earlier when I said MySQL. Obviously, Java is a big competitor to .NET and C#. We have Node.js, which is JavaScript on the server, and Ruby and Python as well. Again, very popular language that we're seeing not only in startups, but even government entities, and also within colleges and other communities as well. So as more and more people start to use Azure, we just let them know, hey, you know what? Whatever you choose to do, chances are you're going to be able to do it here. And if you can't, let us know, and we'll figure out a way to make it work. And that's been the driving force between getting Azure expanded in the past year or so. So if you noticed, if you look at old articles about what Azure supported, what it didn't, and I've heard firsthand stories from startups about how in the past couple of years they've used Azure for many years and seen those improvements. So again, in our panel today, we'll learn a little bit more about that. So as you can see, there's a bunch of different languages here. And as long as you can set up a virtual machine, you can pretty much have any application or language you want. Finally, this diagram here shows a bunch of different logos here, probably too small to see in the back, but it goes to show you that we work together with not only our partners, but also our competitors as collaborators. So again, Microsoft is one of the most complete cloud solutions you can get, and that's not just marketing speak, because Microsoft manufactures the Windows Server OS, which is used widely around the world, in addition to Linux. We provide an on-premise and hybrid solution that can't match a lot of our competitors. So basically, let's say you have a bunch of Windows servers running on your on-premise environment. If you want to move things in the cloud, you're not stuck in the cloud. You're not locked down. You can bring it back on your on-premise environment. You can push it back up. It uses the same formats. You can take backups in the cloud, bring it back down. So in case you needed to do those moves in between whatever you're planning from one stage to the next, you can. Obviously, you're not going to be doing that frequently, but you do have those options available to you, whether you're running on-premise or in the cloud or a hybrid of both. All right? So again, as I mentioned, Microsoft, what we feel is the most complete cloud solution. If you feel it's not complete for you, again, let me know what you think is missing, what you think would be helpful, any suggestions, feedback. We always take it back internally, and hopefully we'll be able to provide even better services for you. So how do you get all this stuff, right? You can go to azure.com today and sign up for an account. You can go for what's called a pay-as-you-go account, where you'll not be charged beyond what you use. So if you need 10 servers for a weekend, you bring them all up. When you're done, you shut them all down, and you don't have to pay a penny for it after the minute when they're shut down. So Bitspark is actually a program in which you can actually get free money to use Azure. So this is not a quick program that you sign up for 30 days and it's over. It's a three-year program where multiple developers can set up on the same account. And you can start up with just the founder, and you can add your CTO and other developers and so on, and start using all these free credits that you get. So it's $150 per month per member. And as you start to outgrow your Azure usage, we do have another program called BizSpark Plus, which is not mentioned here, but I'll let you know what it provides. It gives you up to $60,000, so 60 grand for a whole year, which gives you even more Azure credits. So if you have a very successful business that you're running for 3 years, and you realize, hey, you know what? Before I run out of these free credits, I want to sign up for that Plus. So the way Plus works is that you let me know, or let any Microsoft evangelist know, that you're running out. And what we'll do is we'll provide a recommendation for you, and they'll take a look at your application, and any pre-approved accounts will be looked at by the BizSpark team, and they'll decide whether you're eligible for the upgrade or not. The regular BizSpark account is a lot easier. If you just want to get started today, you have an idea in your head, you want to build that application, just come to me and let me know. I'll provide a free code for you where you can just go use the free code on the BizSpark site, and you're going to get those free years anyway, just for letting me know that maybe you're a startup developing software, you're less than 5 years old as a company, and you're making less than $1 million a year. So again, really easy to sign up with BizSpark. Sure, you could go to BizSpark.com today and sign up. The BizSpark team will look at your application, usually hear back in a couple of days. But if you come to me first, I'll give you a pre-approved code. You sign up right away, instant approval. I also walk through the steps with a lot of startups here when I do my office hours. I could literally sit with you, walk you through the steps. Within a couple of minutes, you'll be completely set up. You get a really easy sign-up process. So with that, we're going to go into our panel setup. If you give us a couple of seconds, we're just going to get the chairs pulled in really quick, and we'll get our guest speakers up on stage. Thank you very much. I would like to welcome Aaron and Josh to the stage. So we're going to talk about their startups and how they got started with Azure. So really quick, how did you get started with your business, Josh?
Well, I'll give a quick kind of pitch for CauseIQ first. We are a website that provides business intelligence on the nonprofit sector. So our customers are banks, accounting firms, consulting firms, IT firms that have major nonprofit clients. And with me personally, before this, I was a consultant at Deloitte doing a lot of strategy and operations work, financial modeling, that sort of thing. But then right out of college, long time ago now, I worked for a nonprofit where I first kind of realized how kind of nasty data on the nonprofit sector is. So it was a matter of combining two different professional experiences in my life. One, working for a nonprofit, wrangling data on the sector, and then the other, doing business development for a major corporation, realizing that there's a critical need in a vertical that is not being addressed. I'm also a self-taught coder, so I worked nights and weekends proving technological concept and talking with everybody I possibly could. And then I secured an investor, quit my job, and started the company, and that was about 2 years ago now.
All right, and what kind of advice do you have from others who are also running their startups but have a full-time job?
I would say, skirt the boundaries as much as you possibly can, but also read your contract incredibly closely to make sure that your employer does not have IP ownership over what you're developing. But, I think really just talk to as many people as you possibly can and make sure that you can stay on the good graces of your employer so that you can use them as a reference or even as potential customer as you leave versus burning bridges.
Right, don't burn bridges. So with that, Aaron, you want to give us a quick intro to SimpleTix?
Yeah, hello everyone. Can you guys hear me okay? So SimpleTix.com, we're an event registration and e-ticketing solution. We offer kind of like a white label portal design for ticketing. So a lot of people use this for small community theaters. They have all their events listed. We offer a full turnkey solution for online ticketing. A lot of conferences in the US are now using us. And what's special about SimpleTix is our kind of like our global reach, where we're compatible with about 28 international payment gateway providers. So we have clients in the Netherlands, South Africa, Ireland, England, Australia, where we're connected to payment gateways within their own countries. So it's a really smooth checkout process.
And you mentioned all these different countries you're operating in. What kind of competition do you face in all these regions?
Yeah, so pretty much America is the hardest country for us to really market and operate in, because when we got started with SimpleTix, there was about 10 other players in America at most. There was Eventbrite and Ticketleaf and maybe a couple others. Now there's about 400. So it's pretty competitive. So we found that other areas like Australia, Ireland, South Africa is less competitive.
All right.
And we offer a really good solution, and we're really cost effective. So even in the States, we're doing well too, because if they just compare us to Cvent's like $5, $6 per ticket registration, we're just like 79 cents. So the lower cost per provider, we're doing well.
And Josh, do you find the similar story with your competition in the US?
Yeah, well, it's interesting in the nonprofit space because obviously there's a lot of money to be made off of major trade associations and foundations, and there's a lot of companies that serve the sector, but it's not a big enough market that VCs really care about it and that large corporations care about it. So that's fortunate for us because it's a nice little niche for us to operate and grow in. But in terms of DC, the nonprofit sector in the entire country is more or less headquartered here. You've got massive organizations, you've got all the trade associations, but then relevant for us, all the companies, whether accounting firms, IT firms, et cetera, that serve the nonprofit sector located here in DC. Granted, our biggest competition is also located here in DC, but we're competing very favorably against them because we've got better data, more thorough product, and we're more in tune with our customers than they are. So it's actually good having competition because we're not inventing a market from scratch and we can compare ourselves to the incumbent versus trying to, you know, create something from nowhere.
Right, I'm sure there's a lot you can learn from the competition as well
as
you move forward. Yep. So speaking of DC, what brought you to the DC area?
Well, before DC, I was in Chicago, at the University of Chicago, getting a master's degree. And I got recruited by Deloitte, and they paid me a lot of money to come here and work for the firm. And I mean, the great firm, no regrets at all coming to DC. But the fact that it's also a perfect place for me to start my company was coincidence. But primarily came here because I got a job, and I also have a lot of friends here.
It's the right place at the right time.
Yep.
How about yourself?
I'd say the same. Yeah, I graduated college in 2005, and pretty much in New England, the market wasn't as good, but DC was excellent for the job market here. So I was working at Department of Energy right out of college. So.
All right.
Yeah.
Once you got started, when did you choose the cloud? Did you know early on that's the direction you'd go in?
No, for us, it's kind of a funny story because we got started as a downloadable product. People would download our product as a zip file, install it on their own servers, and run with it. And it was easy because I could sleep at night and not have to worry if my servers were going down. It was a lot less stressful, actually. and then we found out that rolling out updates is really hard when people are self-hosting it like that. So we switched over to the cloud about like 3 or 4 years ago. Actually, we didn't really switch to the cloud. We actually began hosting it for our customers, which really wasn't the cloud at all, about 3 or 4 years ago. And it was easier for us to, you know, charge more fees for incremental costs and things like that, and service fees. But rolling out updates was so much easier. And the funny story is how we got first on the cloud, or our own private cloud, was I had a roommate that worked at Motley Fool in Alexandria, and every 3 years, Motley Fool throws all their servers away, all their Dell servers, because they're out of warranty. And my roommate's name was Svavar, he's from Iceland, and Svavar's like, hey, Aaron, pick me up right now, I got 5 servers with your name on them. So I ran over there, I picked him up in my car, loaded down my car, a lot of weight. And I found a co-location facility in Virginia, it was like $99 per server per month to host. So our own private cloud was just cheap. I mean, we were up and running, 5 servers, we only host everything on there. But then, you know, everything was great for the first year, and I got a call one day from one of my customers that a site was down, and then, you know, within 30 minutes, I figured out that the whole server went down, and some RAID configuration crashed. And after that, you know, it took a day for us to really get everything back in together again, but it was like, you know, as an entrepreneur, you wear so many different hats. Like, legal, marketing, bookkeeping, you name it, wear every single hat in the world, but there's one hat you can take off. It'd be great to just take off the whole hardware hat. And
right.
So the cloud seemed pretty ideal, so I don't have to manage the hardware any longer. Just focus on our core products and not have to worry on the infrastructure side. So,
right. How about you, Josh? You want to tell us about your journey to the cloud?
Yeah, well, I really knew that CauseIQ needed to be on the cloud from the get-go because we have about 4 terabytes of unstructured data, then probably about 500 gigabytes of structured data that's that, you know, cleaned data from the unstructured data, and then there's just like all these nasty different infrastructures that I can get into a little bit if we want to talk about that. And with that amount of information, I did not want to deal with like RAID. I mean, I've never touched a RAID 0-1 whatever in my life, and I never ever want to. And so the idea of just not having to deal with that is, you know, more or less a necessity, because I mean, I'm a coder myself. I'm also, I've got the business development hat on. Luckily, I've got some employees now, so I've been able to delegate and shed some of that. But it's, I knew I needed to be in the cloud from the very get-go. But also I had a similar experience way back in the day when I worked for a nonprofit right out of college. We had our entire website go down, and it was on a co-located type server thing, and we lost, I mean, not tons of data, but probably about 2 months worth of data, both with our CRM and with like email subscriptions. And from that point, when I was like a little 21-year-old realizing that, you know, shit can happen, and when it goes down hard. And I just wanted to make sure everything was like doubly, triply redundant, and the cloud generally does that.
All right. So, you know, when choosing the cloud, you know, what brought you to Azure, and how's your experience on that today?
Yeah, with me and Azure, it really actually started with an introduction and a relationship with Microsoft employees. It was one of my early advisors who does a lot of work with open data. As I was, I mean, still an employee at Deloitte and still kind of fleshing out these ideas, he said, hey, Josh, you need to talk to my contact at Microsoft. He's a startup evangelist there. He really can help you out not just with choosing the right stack and right infrastructure, but also navigating the DC startup scene and kind of really understanding, you know, what I should be concerned about and what I shouldn't be concerned about. And so at that point, I went up to Microsoft's offices up in Bethesda and had like a great conversation. And I got introduced to Evan at 7076, and that's how I first got 7076 connection. And yeah, eventually joined the BizSpark program, then eventually the BizSpark Plus program, because there was like a personal relationship, people I could actually talk to at Microsoft. Whereas, you know, I've also hosted on AWS, and I've got nothing bad to say about AWS, but it is a little bit more kind of separate than having people you can actually see face to face and talk to in person here. And also for CauseIQ, we're like a Linux and Python shop. So we've got Ubuntu Virtual Machines, we've got Postgres, we've got MongoDB. Front end is all Django. We've got like a mean, nasty Elasticsearch cluster up there, if that means anything to anybody. But the fact that that's supported well within Azure, like at first I didn't know that that would be possible within the Azure cloud, but then after playing around with it, it, you know, definitely is. And there's some things that are, you know, solid pluses on the Azure cloud that Amazon or others don't have as well.
Right. And it's good to hear that because, you know, I work with a lot of startups and some people have already gotten started with their competitor services and they're having a great experience. And when I talk to them about my availability and how Microsoft can help them on a one-on-one basis, they've decided to stay on the competition but try us out as well. And they realize, hey, this is a lot better because you have a lot of these features, but I can also talk to a person and figure out, you know, where to go with this. So, you know, it's good to hear that from you.
Yep.
And would you like to also share your Azure story?
Yeah, so we're a .NET shop, so we're all C#, .NET on our end. So we were on BizSpark earlier on just to get Visual Studio and some of the other tools as well. So, you know, being on the BizSpark, the whole MSDN subscription, it was easier for us to jump on Azure just because they have a lightweight way you can try it out relatively cheap. So we got in through there, and then after that, we got into BizSpark Plus, so that made it more cost effective for us. So.
All right. And so before we wrap up, any words to inspire the other startups who are here today?
Yeah, so one thing I'd say is the cloud is great, but it's also kind of a double-edged sword because there's a lot more competition. So my one bit of advice is move fast. Like I was recently, like we've been using Zendesk for a help desk the last 5 years at SimpleSix, and we were looking at maybe switching to another solution for a help desk that's a little bit better. And it was funny because when we first used Zendesk 5 years ago, there weren't that many other systems out there at that time. And now there's like 100 different help desk systems out there for a fraction of the price, not half, but like a quarter of the price that are better. So I just say with the cloud, there's a lot more competition out there. So you have to move fast. So if you have an idea, you have to move quick with it. So that's what I would say. Just the cloud also brings more competition.
All right, thanks, Aaron. How about you, Josh?
And I would say that a good product is necessary but not sufficient. And at least given my company, which is definitely B2B, at the end of the day, it's a relationship game. I mean, people are buying CauseIQ not just or not only because like it's awesome and does great things and help my customers make a lot more money than they otherwise would, but they also know me, they know my customers, or they know my company, they trust me, they trust the product, and so that kind of whole relationship and trust game is absolutely necessary, and it took me a while to really realize that even though I'm selling a software-hosted or cloud-hosted software product, SaaS product, that it's still totally a relationship game. So nurture those relationships and build your network.
All right. Well, thank you very much for your time. Before we wrap up, you stay seated for a minute. We do have a third startup. So Nicole had to leave early today because she had a gig. But she did make a video right over here. So I'm going to walk over to my laptop and play it for you guys. So we have Nicole from Palanki. So she's actually a DJ by profession, but her startup she actually uses to book people for events. So she's going to tell us a little bit more about her experience.
So tell us a little bit about your business.
We're Palanki. We are a virtual marketplace where you can find and book entertainment directly through the entertainment themselves online.
All right. And what brought you to the DC area?
I came here right after college. It was a great city, very welcoming, and a lot of opportunity. And it wasn't such a big, intimidating city like New York. I really felt comfortable here.
Do you feel like you have some advantages in DC than you have in other areas?
I certainly feel that there's a lot more opportunity here. It's a smaller community, and there's a lot of up-and-coming things here in the city, and people are open arms if you want to take a part of that.
All right, and what made you decide to use the cloud for your business?
I decided to use Microsoft Cloud because of what I started learning about Microsoft through the representatives here, since Shahed, in 1776. And I also have an advisor who has been working with the cloud for several years. And there sounds like there's a lot of benefits and things like that that actually helped our company to grow.
All right, so share a little bit about how you got started with BizSpark in particular.
So through BizSpark, I was actually about to sign up with a company that was going to work for us in equity, and they were primarily a Microsoft.NET company, and we were currently using Ruby. So I started looking into the benefits and the different things that might happen if I switched the technology, and also cost. And cost was a big factor, and it kind of scared me as far as hosting and all these different tools that we need to invest in. And through our Microsoft representatives here in 1776, I was able to find out about BizSpark, which helped me get on my feet and start using Microsoft technology without putting a hole in my pocket.
All right, that's good to hear. And as we've been moving forward with Azure, Azure now supports not only Microsoft technologies, but our partner and competitors' technologies as well. So you'll find things like Linux and Windows, Ruby, Python, .NET, everything is now available in Azure. So it's good to hear that you've had a positive experience getting up and running on Azure. So any words of inspiration you'd like to share with other startups in the region?
I would say, being a startup is not a very easy feat, but if you're passionate and you are driven and you continue to work hard towards your goal and find great people around you to help you solve some major problems, you will be successful.
All right, thanks for sharing, Nicole. It's good to talk to you.
Thanks.
All right, so thanks again for staying for that panel. We're going to take a quick break before we jump forward into our Data Stacks portion with Luke. Just a big hand for all our startups today.